Ladies and gentlemen, storytellers of all ages, lend your ears to co-hosts Brad and Philip as we delve into the Marketing Your Attraction podcast.
Welcome to Marketing Your Attraction, episode 13. I'm your host, Brad, and I'm joined by my co-host, as always, Philip. Philip, how you doing? Welcome back.
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing this weekend?
I'm doing great. It feels like it's been forever since we last recorded, since we recorded the last two episodes together. Welcome back. It's been a lot of stuff has happened in the last few weeks. What have you been up to?
My goodness, I can't even remember. I was in Philadelphia for, I was teaching there, and then I went from Philadelphia to Oregon to do some visits there, and then Oregon to Arizona and did some visits there, and then from Arizona to Texas.
Wow. You've been all over the place.
That's what I've done in the last week.
Nice. Wow. Just in the last week.
Yeah. Like a week ago, I think I was teaching. So now it's a holiday. Woo.
Yes. Yeah. It's been a whirlwind month for me as well, launching the new Hangtime roller coaster. We had a fantastic launch. The whole park came together and just put on an incredible fireworks show with live entertainment and incredible food. And we had every media outlet from Southern California was out broadcasting on Hangtime. I think I recorded at least 55 outlets during the party. My main responsibility was ensuring that we could broadcast live from the roller coaster using a wireless TerraDeck system. We were broadcasting HD and 4K video live from the roller coaster to KTLA and other local news stations. So that was a fun challenge that I worked on with a team from the entertainment side of Knott's and also the Sean Teagarden production company and an outside vendor. And we all came together, and it was pretty awesome to be able to be streaming live from 150 feet in the air as the roller coaster is going 57 miles per hour. We had some great reaction shots in the local news. Anyway, let's kick off the show.
Yes, our main topic is about simplicity and how to kind of pare down your message. And we'll get into that after some news. The first news is from Brad, and he has a research report.
By the internet standard of time, this is way outdated because I think it was from March of this year. So this is old.
Yeah, 2 months is old in the internet world.
But I hadn't seen it before. At least I don't remember seeing it before. So I apologize if we talked about it on the show before. But the Pew Research Center did a great study talking about social media usage. And I felt like a lot of this was stuff that I've heard before. But I thought it just did a really nice job of compiling a bunch of statistics about how social media is being used by Americans and what networks or what social media networks are popular, how is that changing over time. One of the most interesting stats that I noticed on here is, let me bring it up real quick. So I'm not just making stats up. So they're looking at the percentage of U.S. adults who say they use the following social media sites online or on their cell phone. And they're tracking this from 2012, which in social media time feels like, decades ago, and all the way to 2018. And it's interesting just to see how platforms have sort of come and gone since that time. As I'm sure a lot of our audience knows, Instagram continues to exponentially grow. And if you look at the chart here, we'll link to it in the show notes. Instagram is growing almost at the same rate that Facebook was growing back in 2013, 2014 time. Facebook has now sort of hit that saturation point, at least in the United States. So you see a plateau on this chart. It's still one of the most popular social networks out there, especially by active users. But when looking at this chart, when you ask people what they're using, they mentioned YouTube. And so by percentage of US adults who are surveyed, YouTube's at 73% versus Facebook 68%. Now, I wouldn't necessarily call YouTube a social media site, although a lot of people do use it that way. But yeah, just to quickly go over this chart and of course, trying to describe a chart in audio form is not nearly as compelling as them just clicking that link and checking it out. But, you know, we have YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, and Snapchat as your top five. And the one that I always feel like, and maybe it's just the industry that we work in, or I'm just not paying attention as much, I always seem to forget about Pinterest. I always feel bad. I've had a couple of meetings with the team over there, and I mean, they have a great product, but for whatever reason, it's sort of a blind spot, I think, for me. And we've done at Knott's, we've done a few things here and there with Pinterest, especially with the food side of our brand and the recipe side of our brand. For the most part, we're not too active on there because there's only a handful. I mean, there's really only like two or three of us that work on social media, and it's no one's full-time job. Mm-hmm. So you have to pick and choose networks. But it was interesting to see that Pinterest, you know, has gone from, they were at like 9% and they, you know, years ago, and they're now, you know, 29% and above Snapchat, at least on in this survey, because this is percentage of U.S. adults. So as we talked about in previous episodes, make sure you're always thinking about your target market. But yeah, just to keep the news simple here, I would recommend checking this out in the show notes, reading it over. Maybe there's a social network that you haven't thought of. You know, they talk a lot about LinkedIn here too, and the type of people that are on LinkedIn and how they are, you know, higher income than other social networks. So depending on what your attraction is, you know, there might be a social network other than Facebook to consider, you know, whether that's Pinterest, WhatsApp, LinkedIn. There's a really good article, good research in here, and it's very concise. I mean, you can get almost all the information from two or three charts, but they do have a nice five or six page article that dives into it a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely go check this out and dig into it for those of you that are working in the sector. And even if you're not, it's just great for just understand what's going on. So I have a lot of other news items that I kind of stuck in here. So the next one is I came across this PDF, and by I came across, I mean I was emailed it because I'm part of this emailing list, and I'm going to stick the link in here, and I hope nobody gets angry at me for doing that. But or at least I hope Ryan doesn't get angry at me for doing that. But so there's a PDF in here on top email subject lines from the guy who wrote the Ask formula, Ryan Levesque. And Ryan Levesque is awesome, and his book is incredible. It's about how to ask questions in your marketing. And this is an awesome little PDF. I've already used it for a few subject lines, but I'd recommend just taking a look at it. It's only about 5 pages, and it just basically they've launched a few products lately, and he just went through it and made a list of all their top subject lines and sorted them into categories as to why they worked. And he gives some good examples like using FOMO, curiosity, value, questions, or special details in there. So I'm gonna let you guys dig into that as well. It's a great PDF. Next news item I have is just something just interesting, because we talked about previously about partnering with the city. Here's a great article from the Eureka Springs City Advertising Promotion Commission, and they gave Halloween City, which is a local haunt in their town, $4,000 for marketing efforts. $4,000 is not like, it's not a lot for some people, but for in this context, it's a lot of money for these guys. And there's just a very brief story on it here that I linked to. But I like this because it talks about how they Halloween City went and kind of propositioned this commission to get money to help for their promotion, because they made the exact point that Brad and I talked about, which is that they're bringing in tourism revenue to the city, and they're part of what the city does for Halloween. One of the only things they do for Halloween. There's like none other theme parks or anything else in this area, so there's not that many attractions. So that's a great kind of example for you guys out there that might be, haven't quite opened those conversations up yet.
It's an awesome example. It's so cool to see city governments embracing Halloween attractions, because, 30 or 40 years ago, and maybe still in some cities, Halloween attractions were almost looked at as, in the same context as like illegal, other illegal services, or like gambling halls, those types of things in the underground. So it's cool to see them being legitimized by the by different cities and actually being funded by them as well. And
agree. The next news item I have in here is a cool little thing. Decorating Disney Halloween will be part of the 31 days of Halloween this year. And this behind the scenes special will reveal all the tricks and treats behind the transformation of the Walt Disney World and Disneyland resorts into the scariest yet still magical places on earth. Okay, that's in the press release. Obviously, I don't agree that Disney is the scariest park on earth. That's not a thing. But why I put this in here is to show you guys that we did also previously talk about kind of courting reporters and kind of courting these people because they're starting to get momentum around revealing kind of this side of entertainment. And I think this feature is a good step in that direction. So, you know, if you're in an area where like this with this commission where it's just you or your attraction is kind of the big thing in the area, you could possibly use that to leverage some sort of a special or insider coverage, maybe not from like a major network like this one, but from a smaller network or even as part of a some sort of feature. So that's mainly why I put this in here, is just that to show that you know, features, stuff like this does happen and it is picking up. There's even like a Home Haunter documentary coming out this season too. So it's picking up momentum.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love watching all those behind the scenes ones. They did a great one last year about Christmas. So I'm excited to tune into this one. And yeah, behind the scenes stuff just continues to do really well in the attractions industry. We did a photo at the park of just the maintenance team that helped build Hang Time. And I just did it as a photo that the maintenance team asked us to do. And my coworker, Jennifer, decided to share it on social just as like a thank you to everyone that did all the hard work putting this ride together. I didn't expect it to do much, and actually was one of our most popular posts on Instagram for the month of May, which is just incredible. So there's definitely a thirst for this type of content.
Yep. I put one in here as well on just influencers. For those of you that are interested in it, we already did the episode, so I don't want to get too much into this, but I just want to read an excerpt here. What I like about this article, well, it's a really well-written article just on kind of about basically it's like how kind of saying that influencer marketing is the only marketing now. So it's a pretty bold stance, but there are some great numbers in here to put you guys in context. So I'm going to read an excerpt. For example, if your stock and trade is wedding products and you advertise in a specialist magazine like Brides, which has a circulation of 200,000, 300,000, you can expect to pay over 500,000 for a full page advertisement. Or you can pay an influential celebrity with millions of followers on social media to send out a message extolling the virtues of your products. A few years ago, you might have been able to persuade them for some gratis products. Now they charge. In 2017, sisters Kendall and Kylie Jenner boasted 82 million and 95 million followers each and command 370 to 400,000 per post. So I like the numbers in here. I especially kind of like that stark contrast of, 95 million versus 300,000. And it's kind of like, where is it, how much difference is there between like a post by an influencer and like a full page advertisement in publications? Or you can even backtrack that and think, well, what about like Super Bowl commercials or like radio or television? You know, like even at their largest point of distribution, does it even compare to 85 million and 95 million? So
yeah, the CPM for that magazine seems really high.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're able to charge $500,000 for a full page ad, that number seems a little bit off to me. But it is interesting. It's just the concept, whether the numbers are correct or not. Just
yeah,
idea of the juxtaposition of those two.
Yeah, and I especially like how they're saying, well, because it's a specialist magazine. But if you translate that over to like Kendall and Kylie Jenner, like they're like specialty influencers, which is what influencers are. Like they're not mass media. Like they're influencers because they're specialty in particular subjects. You know, like Tim Ferriss is like entrepreneurship and traveling and that kind of space versus people that are like celebrity and techie. So I like also that that example, because it kind of shows you that, like, you know, you're looking for that same level of specialty audiences.
No, exactly.
Okay. I'm going to cut through the last few ones here. So there's an example in here of a tour company that's expanding into doing Halloween tour packages. And the example I put in here is Dracula's Halloween Party in Transylvania. I mainly put this in here just to for you guys to think about the whole concept of packaging a whole experience. This is like literally the whole experience. It's like a whole 3-day thing and everything's included. So kind of thinking about packaging and understanding that other people are starting to do this as well. Not just kind of us in the attraction space. And here's an interesting article on social media managers saying how social media management has become a pink collar job and highlighting that there's women are much more encouraged to be social media managers and just all that everything going around with that. One line in here that struck me was the assumption was that these jobs were extensions of what people would be doing for fun anyway, which is pretty accurate. And just this is one of those like think about it kind of articles, you know, read it. And if you guys have dedicated social media managers, you know, think about, you know, are you kind of devaluing the job because you falsely think that people would be doing this for fun anyway, because I used to operate in that vein. And then, you know, you kind of realize that being a social media manager is really a specialized skill and is not something you would do just to kind of quote unquote have fun and be lucky to get paid for it. But I think all this is true. This is a very interesting article kind of from Wired. And the last one I want to put in here is just to kind of keep an eye on, which is a Twitter introducing new US election candidate labels and launches political campaign policy. Mainly just keep an eye on this types of thing because kind of in the wake of the kind of Facebook data breach and the whole Facebook scandal, I definitely think this is a reaction to that, but it's just interesting because I think it's a good direction, or kind of like right now, I tentatively believe this is a good direction to go, where there's just more policing in profiles. But it's going to be something for us to watch because it might affect kind of our businesses in terms of making sure that we do keep up with any sort of certifications or labels that we might need to have in the future. Watching that to make sure that when you're working with influencers, they also have the appropriate certifications. If that becomes a thing that goes beyond kind of like this political label.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know if we mentioned it in our influencer episode, but there are a lot of, I think it's the FCC that oversees like influencer marketing and how bloggers and influencers and all the other buzzwords, what those people are, how they're supposed to label posts and talk about when they're getting paid for stuff and when they're not. Cause that's, I think that started
how they label sponsored content. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are specific rules about that. And actually the person who gets fined is you, not the influencer, like the brand, the person who bought it gets fined, not the influencer, which is such a weird way of doing it.
Yeah. And I don't know if they've enforce those laws too much, but either way, you should probably follow them. And I see most influencers out there, you know, tagging a sponsored or doing hashtag ad or hashtag partner. But if you've never heard of this before and you want to learn something about it, I think if you just Google like FCC blogger rules, it'll come up. Or maybe we can put a link into the show notes, because I don't think we talked about that in the influencer episode at all.
Well, we didn't, but. That's okay.
Can't fit it all in there. Right?
Can't fit it all in. Oh, man. Okay, all that news. So, main topic this week is simplicity. So, I am pairing this topic, or kind of pairing a few excerpts from different books together for this. Originally, I wanted to cover this theme because it is the first part of the Make It Stick book, which is one of my favorite books on kind of marketing theory. And I'm also pairing it with a chapter from Building a Story Brand. So the essence here to this simplicity, it has a few things, like basically complex, the more complex something is, the more it kills conversions and the more it kills the consumer's ability to spread the idea. And there's that old quote, "To edit is divine." Some manifestations of this are like the commander's intent, which is something that the military uses to kind of make sure that everyone that's working on a project is aligned on exactly what that project needs to be. So it's kind of, you can look at this in multiple dimensions, I think, for this this theme. You know, our goals as a marketing department and as a company, in a wider view, should be simple and easy to articulate. And that should also translate into what we're trying to convey to the audience. You know, it should be simple. It shouldn't be five or six or seven things. It should be kind of one thing that is made very clear and put into kind of plain English. And we tend to get caught up on every piece of this. You know, we get caught up on making our companies and our departments seem complex, and then also making these messages too complex, and then also focusing on too many things and all these elements. So some of the things I want to highlight from these two books here is going back to the commander's intent. There's some great questions in here that I think you could apply also to your marketing messages. There are some questions they recommend you ask. And one is, if we do nothing else during tomorrow's mission, we must X, you know, you must X. And the single most important thing is X. I think those are great to incorporate into your department or into kind of your marketing or into, you know, the most important thing you need your customers to do, or et cetera. The next suggestion is kind of to use schemas. And the best example of this is the way the Alien was pitched was when it was pitched to the producers was Jaws on a spaceship, because it's like kind of using compounding schemas together to create a new association. And if you haven't used a schema before, a schema is something that describes a pattern of thought or behavior. It kind of organizes into a category so that people can find compound relationships. So basically that's like describing things kind of in relation to other things, or building off of reference points that your customers already have to make it simpler. So how I've done that previously is for our ZTAG, zombie tag game, zombie, live zombie infection, all this, kind of like the marketing started off as like live zombie infection and ZTAG and all this like confusing stuff that no one understood. And eventually I just simplified it to, it's laser tag without the guns. And that's just kind of how we described it. Cause I'm just borrowing off of a reference point that people already have. Like, they have a reference point for how people play laser tag, even if you've never played it. And then you understand, trying to play without a gun and what that would look like. A few other things that suggested in here is to not just that it is clear, but that it's kind of put into plain English. The notion from this being that people buy the products they can understand the fastest. So making sure that when you're talking about what it is, that you're putting it into a frame of, that you're putting it into people that don't have the expertise, because you kind of have to take your head out of the situation, understand that the customer doesn't have all of the reference points that you do, because you're kind of from the inside looking at it. So one of the examples from the Building a Story Brand book that I liked was when they were redoing redoing a website for a painting company, and they kind of redid the whole website just to focus on, we paint all sorts of crap. So just saying, you know, that's all we do is we paint everything. We paint all sorts of stuff to just make it in plain English rather than flowery language about the different types of painting and the artistic side of it and whatnot. So Brad, what do you think about this? And do you have any examples?
Yeah, now simplicity definitely is important. And I think in today's world, it's always hard to kind of take a step back and go, okay, what am I supposed to be working on? And how do we make this really simple? Because you're not, you know, with digital marketing in particular, you're not really constrained by the number of pages or the length of a 30-second TV spot, or a lot of these constraints that were in advertising and marketing for years don't always apply to digital marketing. I mean, of course, there's always constraints with ad units and different ad networks and best practices. But in a lot of ways, when you're left to your own devices, you can create almost anything and everything that you want in digital marketing. And that's a good and a bad thing, because I know when we've talked about different social campaigns, I'm going to use social campaigns for this one. This comes to my mind right now, is we just make them too complex. So if we have a social campaign, and we had one a couple of years ago when we were first trying to push Snapchat for Not Scary Farm. And it was a really clever idea because Snapchat hadn't opened up sponsored lenses to smaller companies. I think the buy-in at that point was like $200,000, and they were really only being used by major movie studios. Our agency, CK, pitched this great idea of, hey, why don't we do a face swap? But since we don't have a lens, why don't we do a face swap with a poster? So we'll put up these Scary Farm posters in malls all around Southern California and also at the park. And we'll encourage, through social media, we'll encourage users on Instagram, Facebook, and even on our own Snapchat following, which is fairly small back then. We'll encourage them to go find one of these posters, use the regular face swap feature that, if you use Snapchat, you've probably used that before. It's a really fun kind of augmented reality feature. And when they hold that up to the monster poster that we have, the Scary Farm poster, they'll be able to do this, a face swap with that monster, and then they can submit that photo to enter a contest. So I had a couple of reservations when they were talking about this. It's a really clever idea because it got us around the limitations of not having $200,000 to experiment with a Snapchat lens. But the issue was the complexity of it. And I just started Snapchat, started using Snapchat, right around this time. So I wasn't too familiar with it. And so we said, you know what, this is fairly low budget. Let's try it out and see what happens. And unfortunately, it just didn't catch on because it wasn't simple. And some of the big mistakes of this campaign and other experiments that we've tried have taught me is you have to keep it simple. And on social media, the first big rule that I see brands break all the time is when they try to take someone from one social network, like from Facebook, and they try to move them over to a Snapchat or move them over to an Instagram and try to follow a brand on there and then try to have them do an action, you just see your engagement rate go way down. Because mm-hmm. you're taking people out of that experience on that network, on that Facebook app, on the Instagram app, whatever they're familiar with, and you're taking them to this whole other world that they may or may not have an account for. And the barrier to entry, although it's very, it's free, there's not like a cost barrier, there's that time barrier. So that's a big issue when thinking about campaigns is, okay, how do I describe this in just a few steps? If you're looking to do like a contest or something like that, like what we were doing with this poster, I mean, if you boil it down, we were having them go to a different social network than they were using. Then they had to go to a physical location. Once they got to this physical location, they had to take this photo using Snapchat and then email us the photo, because back then there was not an easy way. I don't think Snapchat has had a way to message brands at that point. They had to actually email this photo. And so I think we had like maybe 15 entries. And we had spent a couple $1,000s promoting this. So it wasn't a big bet. It was a fairly low cost lesson that we learned from that. I think that's a great example of when you start to think about being clever instead of thinking mm-hmm. about being simple and thinking like your audience. I think that was the hardest part too, because we were so excited about this campaign and of course we knew all the steps to enter. So it was like crystal clear to us and the agency. But then as I started explaining it to friends and family and I started seeing guests write in with questions, I realized like, oh my gosh, we're in our own bubble here. we understand this because we helped create it, but everyone that's outside of our little bubble has no idea what we're talking about. And I think that inside baseball type thing happens a lot. And
yeah.
I mentioned a little bit earlier about how it's really hard to step back, pretend like you don't have any of the knowledge that you have, and really think from that guest perspective. And usually from that campaign, I learned a big lesson is, you know, ask family and friends, ask coworkers that aren't working on that campaign. I know it sounds simple and it really is, but I feel like we don't try out our ideas enough. We just assume they're going to work, and maybe we're like afraid to test them a little bit. But that would be my biggest advice on how you can quickly tell whether something's simple or not, is ask someone who has no idea. They're not working on it at all. They're not in the industry necessarily, and just see if you can describe it to them and ask them, hey, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I agree. I think also that we get we get into this wanting to complicate it and adding, yeah, just like you said, adding these layers to it. And it's like, you know, you really need to distill it down to one core concept in anything, you know, like the core concept of what you're trying to achieve from a team, and also the core concept of the campaign, or the core concept of what you're trying to get them to do, or just anything. Which is kind of why I like the commander's intent thing so much. Cause it's like, you know, if the single most important thing, you know, about this is X, you know, is this, you know, that the single thing we want them to do. Cause I think all the time we always get caught up in like adding stuff. You know, we want to add a lot of stuff to our message kind of to keep selling them or to make it more appealing or XYZ, but you know, that just complicates things.
Yeah. And we've been talking about it from, or at least my example was from a campaign perspective or like contest, but even from a PR perspective, when you're pitching media, I think simplicity gets lost a lot. Yeah. I think, you know, we're always so excited about all of the features of our new ride or the backstory of our attraction, but you really have to hook people really quickly. And we talked a little bit about this in our PR episode, so I won't go into it too much, but just think about when you are launching a new, I'm going to use a haunted house as an example. Like, you don't need to give a character's backstory in your PR pitch. Like, what separates you from other attractions? And how do you say that like in a sentence that gets people excited? An example of that new Hangtime roller coaster that we just launched. Yeah, you know, there's like a surfing placemaking backstory that we have about the ride. There's a lot of different features of it. It's cutting edge and stuff, but a lot of our pitches were either it has the steepest drop in California, or it's the first and only dive coaster in California. And those were, that was it. And then if we could get them engaged in the conversation from there, then we would continue to add, you know, more information to that pitch. But you want to hook them with that simplicity before you try to just overwhelm them with all the features and story and backstory. And I think that's something I'm always trying to catch myself on, is just keep it very clear, concise, short. You know, as soon as I start to do a second paragraph on a pitch email, I'm usually going down the wrong path, I find, especially when it's that introductory pitch email.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. So kind of in closing, you know, really sit back and try and boil down these messages and everything, you know, everything about it. I mean, there's always room for simplification in every way of this. You know, are you simplifying the purpose of your campaign? Are you simplifying the message in the campaign? Have you distilled the most important thing that you're tracking? Because especially on the campaign side, you know, if we know it, if you're all aligned as to what the goal is, then there's a lot less kind of micromanaging that needs to be done for everyone monitoring the campaign and your whole team. And then some tips are, can you incorporate schemas at all? You know, can you describe it as Jaws on a spaceship? Because that says so much more than trying to describe, you know, what it is. What kind of schemas can you work into it? And also, can you, another tip would be, can you open up a gap, like a knowledge gap? You know, can you start off with questions, or can you try and, as Brad mentioned, hooking people, can you incorporate some sort of gap into that? And there are some examples in the show notes for you all, but otherwise, making sure that it's clear. And as Brad mentioned, you can seek people that aren't kind of in your bubble, but are you putting it in plain English? Do people understand? And then, especially if it's a larger campaign, or if it's something like a larger scale event or for your attraction, you know, does the audience kind of understand what you're giving them that they want, and what their life would look like if they go or don't go? You know, just these very basic, simple things. Are you painting all of these pictures and making sure there's clarity in this above all else, and that it's simplified to its actual core, its essence? Anything else, Brad?
No, I think that, you know, we should keep it simple, right?
So we should keep it simple.
We shouldn't spend an hour talking about simplicity, right? That's almost, that almost seems hypocritical in some point, right?
Correct. If you want more, there's more content in the show notes that we're mailing out that has examples and has it written down for you all.
And if you haven't read the book, Make It Stick, which I haven't read for a while, so actually I need to reread that. And actually, right now I'm in the middle of reading Building the Story Brand. Those are both great books to check out, both for simplicity, but also just, you know, in all aspects of marketing. I think they ask and answer a lot of interesting questions that apply to the attractions industry in particular.
Correct. We'll probably be talking about Make It Stick and Building a Story Brand in more detail later, because there's a lot of elements from Building a Story Brand that are really great to talk about.
Yeah. And if you have an example of a campaign gone wrong, that would be a fun segment to possibly start. I don't know if we'll get enough brave people to talk about bad campaigns, but if we get a few, I'll definitely share more, because I feel like if you have worked in marketing for a while, and if you're doing your job where you're experimenting with different things, there's always a lot of really fun failure stories. I know I have quite a few where mm-hmm. you think, oh my gosh, I've designed this perfectly, this is going to go great, and it doesn't go so well. And I'll just tease mine. So hopefully we'll get some more submissions. When I first started at Knott's Berry Farm, I was really excited about hashtag Snoopy Selfie. And there's a whole nice story about that, how that just crashed and burned. So we'll share that on a future episode. But anyway, I think that wraps up episode 13. Philip, where can they learn more about the show and make sure they never miss an episode?
www.marketingyourattraction.com. There's an awesome opt-in form there to make sure you get on our email list, so you can get the expanded show notes every week that includes all of the excerpts from the news articles and the links to news articles and my crazy ramblings from books and examples that Brad and I listed, all in there for you, delivered every Monday.
Perfect. Anything else you wanted to add? I know the symposium's coming up pretty soon.
Oh, yes. That's also in the show notes. Our symposium's coming up on July 30th. And there's a listener coupon code in there in the show notes for you all to get $30 off.
The symposium. Who's it for?
I think I'm going to say, you know, owners, operators, designers, anyone in the attractions industry. Specifically, we're looking at seasonal attractions. So see, if you're an attraction and you do seasonal events at your attraction, definitely check it out. We're going to be looking at crafting first impressions, and we're actually be working in some of the some concepts we've been talking about here, but it'll be especially useful for those in the marketing side of things, as we'll go into how you make moments more memorable at your attraction.
Awesome. Well, I think that wraps up episode 13. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.